Yo, welcome to NOTR 1, the hippest, hoppitest podcast on the entire internet. Joining us this week, we have the lovely Ashy.
Hello, boys.
We have the Nicholas Reed.
Hey, guys. What's up?
And we have Anthony.
Hi, guys.
This week we're gonna uncover some of the best hidden gems in the movie industry, the movies that nobody wants to talk about, the movie that nobody gives the proper respect to. We're gonna start off with the biggest brand of this generation, the Twilight Saga.
Oh my god! Oh my god! I'm so glad we're finally talking about Twilight. It is so hard sometimes on the internet to find people to talk to about Twilight because they just don't understand it. Like. It's about love. Like, what girl wouldn't want a guy like Edward Cullen in her life? If she does, she's a total dyke. I said it. She's a total dyke.
Yes, it is the true. It is the Romeo and Juliet of our generation. It speaks to an era. It speaks to romance and really not tanning that well at beaches.
It's like, it's better than Romeo and Juliet because nobody dies. And that's just really sad in Romeo and Juliet, when people died.
I hate to bring up a point of contention, but a lot of the people in Twilight are already dead. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I don't want to dissuade you from your opinions at all, but that is the truth.
But it's eternal life. It's like, hey, we're going to live forever because we died at 18 and we're never going to get, like, gross and old and turn 30.
Not that we want to turn off any of the older members of our audience. You're just as valid, opinion-wise, as anyone else out there. Yes.
Mr. Anthony, what do you have to add to this conversation?
I haven't seen them, so it's not really fair of me to comment on them, really.
How have you not seen the movies of a generation? I know these are the first movies I'm going to sit down and have my kids watch when they're old enough to see movies, to show them what we had when we were growing up, the movies that defined our era, that speaks to everybody. It speaks to the young, the old, the really, really old who don't age, and the likes. And you should watch these. These are... Are you waiting until the final movie is out so you can watch them all in one glorious sitting and embrace the greatness?
No, I'm waiting for the porn parodies of them. That sounded so less creepy in my head before.
You're a horrible person. Twilight isn't about sex. It's about not needing sex to love. It's about a man telling a woman that she doesn't need sex, and she doesn't because he respects her.
I like
sex, though.
I like boobs.
Oh my god, boobs are awesome.
Yeah.
I'm indifferent to them.
Okay, what if we, like, play a game through the rest of the podcast, and, like, we choose a word, and anytime you guys say it, I have to take off an article of clothing. Wouldn't that be hot?
But how would we know? I'm not telling you what you should do with your time or anything, but how would we know?
Well, I'd totally tell you guys. I'd be like, oh my god, my top just came off. I got it stuck on my headphones. Can you believe that?
I can.
Okay.
I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not just about true love in these movies. It's also about overcoming adversities, overcoming these hard problems that teenagers face in their life. And, it, you know, it's something that we can all relate to when we have that classroom, when that one guy comes in and everything freeze frames. And, you know, you just kind of get flushed with emotion. Did anybody else tear up during the first Twilight movie like I did?
Oh my god, I cried. I was like, I wish some guy would walk into my science classroom and look at me like that and think about how much he wanted to kill me, because that's commitment.
He loved her so much that he was willing to kill himself just to be with her and to kill her later on to be with him. I mean, if that's not true enough, if you are selfish enough to take away from them what is most precious for yourself, how is that not true romance?
Oh my God, you get it. You really get it.
Earl, you just asked me if I cried when watching the first film. I can safely say I didn't, because I was too busy doing something better than watching Twilight.
I really thought you were going to say you were too busy watching the porn versions of Twilight.
Well, that's what I was doing that was better. Oh, God. So, anyway.
So, I mean, final thoughts on the Twilight Saga, these glorious, glorious films of our generation, the ones that, the true York stories of the 2000s.
It is the most important story ever told, and I wish I had kids just so I could show them those movies. Like, I kind of want to go out and get pregnant just so I can have a baby and sit it down and make it watch Twilight. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Were you cheap?
Like, maternity wear is so gross, though, so I don't know if that's a good idea.
Were you Team Edwards or Team Jacobs?
Oh, my God, how could anyone be anything other than Team Edward? Jacob Black was so gross. He's like, I'm a little puppy dog, why don't you love me, Bella? She doesn't love you because you don't commit to her the way Edward committed to her, okay? You don't love her the same way. And you probably need to wear flea collars.
He did cut his.
I can't. Hello.
He did cut his hair for her, so there's that.
I'm team both. I can't decide between them. That's. I don't have an opinion either way.
Hop out.
You should pick a team and go with it. The passion that the fans showed when choosing these sides, when they battered it out, when they had the Burger King commercials. I saw the fire in the that generation's eyes I've never seen before.
Erica, Dad, I'm doing a podcast! Give me I'm trying to record. We're talking about Friends, Dad! Sorry, guys.
It's okay. I mean, I think that Team Edwards versus Team Jacob will be this generation's Berlin Wall. It will be our World War II, a battle between two sides so fierce, so determined, that they butted heads for years and years on an issue. That was peacefully resolved, I assume.
I don't like competition. I think that everyone should just get along. I just wish everyone would get along all the time, and that would be awesome. Why can't everybody just hang out and be cool? I mean, she could be a werewolf vampire, right? That's the thing that could happen. Why don't you guys do that?
That's not canon, okay? My God, read Stephanie Meyer's FAQ on her website. You can't turn somebody into a werewolf, idiot.
I didn't realize that weaponry was coming into this. Where's the cannon?
Oh my God, you are such a loser.
Listen, Mom. I didn't know you were on this podcast, too.
Oh, my God, I'm not your mom.
Oh, you're just saying things she says to me all the time. I guess that's fair. I apologize.
So, yes, I mean, that was the Twilight Saga, such a bombastic film franchise. And another one that's just off the chains, off the hooks, off the hizzy, as they say nowadays, is the Transformers Saga by one Michael Bay, a true artists of our generation, the Leonardo da Vinci of movie making. And I mean, what are your thoughts on these films, these iconic imagery, the beautiful shots, the wonderful scores, the grounded action that's so nuanced as to just make you wonder what everybody else is doing with their time? Why are they still making movies after seeing these films?
Well, I have no opinion on them either way, but they've made a lot of money, so I guess they must be really good. Because that's how you know if something's good, when it makes a lot of money, right?
It's exactly how it goes, because, you know, people see these Michael Bay films, and they realize, they finally get what movies are all about. They finally understand why people go out and spend $15 to see something like this on the big screen in 3D, IMAX, supersonic sound effects, and all that other jazz. I mean, Michael Bay understands what makes a movie special. He understands what draws an audience attention. He understands the intelligence that goes behind making film, and how you have to connect with an audience on a whole new level, a spiritual level, that a lot of films just miss out on. They want to, you know, they want to go for the big explosions and the non-stories. But Michael Bay understands that you need more than that in your films to really speak to an audience.
Shia LaBeouf is really hot.
Did you see he was naked the other day?
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
I did not see that. How did nobody, like, tell me about that?
Because they were too busy having an intellectual discourse at Harvard about the Transformers films and, you know, the little meanings that each film has. Like, the two robots in the second one who... But speaking about our general tendency to stereotype minorities in films and playing up to that archetype, I mean, it was very, very... It was very, very well-crafted filmmaking by Mr. Michael Bay.
If you want to see him naked, go to grannypanties.com. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying you should do it if you want to see it. Don't let me tell you what to do.
Does panties have one Y or two in it?
There's seven. There's seven Ys.
Oh, wait. I think I got it. Hold on.
Mr. Elias, what do you think about the Transformers films while she's looking up Shia LaBeouf's naked video?
Because I like doing, like, special effects and explosions, and I don't want a story in my films. Why would I want a story? So I think this Transformers film.
Ew! That's not Shia LaBeouf naked! Oh my God! Sorry.
I'm sorry, I was misinformed by the internet. That never happens to me before, so I will keep better lookout on the future and links that I send to you. Sincerely, Nicholas Reed.
Thank you.
So I think the Transformers trilogy is the greatest trilogy ever made. Yeah.
It is perhaps, I mean, it's easily the best trilogy ever made. What other trilogy comes close to it? Maybe the second two Matrix films, Twilight, of course, but that's not a trilogy, it's just a saga. I mean, I honestly, Godfather, Lord of the Rings, who cares? You know, the Nolan Batman films, overrated, but Transformers, I think... 100 years, those are going to be the films that people look back on and say, like, this is what filmmaking was. This is what movies should be. This is what movies should inspire to be. It's just so well-crafted, so well-shot, such rich dialogue. I don't know how Michael Bay does it. Not only did he do it once, but he did it three times. And he's going for a four-peat in a couple of years, and I just can't wait to see what he pulls out of his hat with this film. I'm expecting... Like, maybe we'll see a robot hell next time. Because
I wouldn't want to put a value judgment on the trilogy or the films in any way, because I don't feel like I should put my opinion into other people. But as far as I'm concerned, they're films. They exist there on the screen, and they made a lot of money, so they must be good, right?
They're not just good, they're great. I would go as far as to say they perhaps could be perfection on film. I mean, I can't think of anything wrong with them. It just speaks to me on so many levels, spiritually, mentally, even physically. I get moved by the action, moved by his scenes. Like, some of them just induce tears, fears, cries, hopes, joys, remorse, everything. I just go through this gambit of emotions watching the Transformers films. It's getting me worked up right now, and you know, I promised myself I wouldn't cry out talking about them, but I'm sorry, somebody else talk.
I was really sad when Megan Fox didn't come back for the last movie, because I think she's kind of cool, even if she's kind of a slut. I mean, she seems like kind of a slut, right?
Erica, I'll get out! I'm doing my podcast! No! I don't want any lemonade! Get out! I will not put my pants on! Just go, go away! I love you! Bye! Okay. I apologize to the internet and to you three individually for what just transpired. That was not cool.
It's okay.
Okay.
You were talking about Megan Fox and her role. I mean, she is perhaps one of the most well-rounded females on screen to date. Such a character who, you know, she didn't play the damsel in distress. She was strong, independent, smart, and she wasn't just about sex appeal.
Wait a second. Well-rounded? Did you totally just call her fat? Like, I know she's pregnant, but you can't just call a chick fat like that unless she's actually fat, and Megan Fox is not fat. Or were you talking about her boobs?
I have no opinion either way on either of her boobs.
Would you have an opinion if it was both of the boobs?
No.
What about you, Mr. Ellis? I'm sure you have an opinion on boobs.
I like boobs.
There you go. He likes boobs. I mean, that is a type of intelligence that comes out of these Michael Bay films.
Has there been a poll? Like a public poll about Megan Fox boobs?
Like, which is better, the left or right?
I would go by whichever one won that.
I'm sure on the internet there's probably been several polls about her boobs. I'm sure we can find it if we search hard enough, but, you know, we just want to focus on these movies, not just degrade them to be about sex appeal and some random chick in them, but the ultimate sacrifice that Michael Bay has gone through in making these films. I mean, we've been robbed of a sequel to Bad Boys and Pearl Harbor just because he wants to focus on his definitive works. And, it has paid off, but I do hope he returns to some of his earlier works and perhaps raised them to the standards in which he set for himself for the Transformers trilogy. So, I mean, any final thoughts on the Transformers trilogy before we move on?
I like when they transform into things. That was my favorite part of the movies.
There
when the Transformers did things.
Now we're going to talk about a film that's it's generally underrated and underappreciated because the audience just doesn't understand what the director had in mind. A film that is just so vivid, so imaginative, so it's a callback to the earlier days when everything was shiny and good in this world. We're of course talking about Batman and Robin, a film that a lot of people harp on because it doesn't. It's not as negative and downbeat as the rest of the Batman films. It's cheery, it's uplifting, it's spiritual, it's transcendent.
I like that it's titled Batman and Robin, not Batman or Robin, so I don't have to choose between the two of them.
Yes, and
I thought it was so funny when Arnold Schwarzenegger, is that how you pronounce that? Okay. When he was like, I used to see you. That's so funny, because he's like frozen. Oh my god. And all through the movie, he's like, ha ha ha, ice. And I'm like, ha ha ha, ice. Ice is so funny. Oh my god. You guys.
I hope that the person who wrote the Batman and Robin film has a bright future in Hollywood. I mean, that dialogue, as you mentioned, those rich and dreamy ice puns. I mean, it has to be a creative mind, a comedic genius to come up with that, and to time it so perfectly each and every time that the audience wasn't really expecting it, but it hit them, and it hit them hard. That's a skill that you don't learn in school. It's not something you pick up over time. It's just the it factor. It's something that you're born with. And I hope that he's gone on to write many other great films. And he's shared with the world his knack for comedic timing and this dialogue writing that many other movies would just be envious to have half of in.
Chris O'Donnell is really hot.
He brings a new dimension to the character of Robin. Before Robin was just simply a boy wonder, but here he becomes a teen wonder, a man among men. I mean, he almost outranks Batman in these films. I mean, he even gets equal billion, which is something he's never done before up until this point. And it's because of Chris O'Donnell's epic portrayal of Robin the boy wonder. And how can we ever forget Alicia Silverstone's turn as Batgirl?
I like the bit when I like the bit when she said, when she asks her uncle to suit her up into a bat suit, because that's not creepy at all. That's just perfectly normal. That's what all young girls want their uncles to dress them as Batgirl.
Hello. So, my uncle gave me a leather bat suit when I was 16, and I didn't think it was weird. Are you saying that's weird?
No, I'm saying it's perfectly normal.
Okay.
Okay.
So long as we're all in agreement that my uncle's bat suit that he made me dress up in when I was 16 is perfectly normal.
I don't have an opinion either way on that.
So yes, Uma Thurman's portrayal as Poison Ivy, I mean, just seeing how she pained for Mother Nature and how vicious Batman and Robin attacked plantkind because they were selfish and fought for humans just made me, you know, it, deep down inside, it was what made me become a vegan. It's what helped me on my career path to becoming an environmentalist, because just like Poison Ivy, I wanted to fight for the people who had no voice.
Wait a second. Vegans only eat, like, veggies, right?
That's a vegetarian. Vegans do not eat anything that comes from the ground.
Okay. So, like, what do you eat? Because, like, if you want to save the plants, you can't eat the plants. But if you don't eat animals, you don't eat animals. So, what do you eat?
Really, I don't eat much. It's pretty much a diet of water. It keeps me...
But, like... What about the myriad of tiny animals that live in water, like single-celled organisms that are the basis of our life? You're killing those, too, dude.
Oh, then they deserve to die, don't they?
Okay.
But yes, I mean, just, you know, like it's such a great film because you really don't know which side is right or wrong. I mean, you can make a case for Poison Ivy and her goals to save mankind. You can make a case for Batman and Robin and their desire to protect mankind. You can even make a case for Mr. Freeze and his desire to make isolated puns. I mean, who hasn't been tempted?
Do you know which bit I really liked in it? I liked the bit where Batman and Robin saved the day, because I did not see that coming at all. I thought that was a great twist when Batman wins and defeats Mr. Freeze. That was awesome. Oh, you go, Batman.
Nice.
But I mean it's not just that Batman and Robin win, but they also give a moral victory to Mr. Freeze, because he gets to finish off the film as a hero as he confronts Poison Ivy and he says, "The Iceman cometh." At that point, I'm just overcome with emotion, as this movie has really moved me beyond anything I had seen at this point. I mean, I was but a young lad when I saw this in movie theaters, but I knew from then on that movies were something special, something very unique, something wholly original.
Hello?
And something that could really, really just, you know, touch a young boy and make him understand where his future had to lie.
Sorry. I'm not laughing.
Mr. Ellis, are you laughing at my transcendence of cinema through Batman and Robin? Are you laughing at my spiritual journey through this film? How dare you?
I'm just touch a young boy and I just got the fucking... I don't... Oh, that's so wrong. Sorry.
Yes, it's very much so wrong. Why must you pervert something so pure, so innocent, so wholesome like that? What's your negativity? Mr. Nick,
actually, just one more thing before we go off Batman. Earl, when he touched you, did you enjoy it?
Again, I am ashamed to say that you are perverting such a wholesome memory of my youth and turning it into something evil and nasty. That is so not cool.
You loved it, Earl.
We are moving on before Mr. Ayers ruins anything else for this generation. And we're going to you know, it's sometimes hard to reboot or remake a film, but it's even harder at times to come back almost two decades later and not only hit it out of the park, but hit it at a level that none of the other films had done before. And that's exactly what we got with Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, a film that brought Indiana Jones back into the limelight, but it brought him back in such a manner that every other Indiana Jones films before this became irrelevant. They were non-essential. I mean, you only had to watch one film, and that was Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I mean, it's a film that embodies everything that's great about the character, the universe, and it just speaks to me. What were your thoughts on this film?
I like the bit when the aliens come out of the ground, because I did not see that coming at all, and it was awesome.
I mean, it was like M. Night Shyamalan-esque. I mean, the master of suspense, twist, storytelling in cinema, and it was nice to see that they took that element from him and applied it to Indiana Jones, because I don't think anybody saw aliens coming, and it was such an utter shock and surprise that the audience I was watching with it gasped in unison, and it was just one of those rare moments in cinema where it all came together, where it all kicked, and you understood, like, you can take your fans for a ride, but you have to make sure the destination is worth it, and it was so worth it. We were all moved. It was a round of applause, a standing ovation. I think I saw a grown man weep with joy.
I also really didn't see coming the twist where Shia LaBeouf, or LaBeouf, whatever his surname is, was Indiana Jones' son. Because I just did not see that coming at all, and it was awesome.
You know, you can see him naked on the internet.
I'm going to go search all that now.
It's grannypanties.com with 7 Y's.
Don't listen to him!
You can search a granny panties data. But, I mean, what were your thoughts on Crystal Skull? The Indiana Jones, the de facto movie.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I did kind of appreciate how the move was towards more of a 50s sci-fi pulp rather than the classic adventure pulp that had been existing in the past. And while I don't think it was an entirely successful move, I do think that it was an interesting way to look at the Indiana Jones trilogy and revisit it and say, well, this is sort of a separate kind of storytelling. It's a separate arc. On top of that, I believe that anyone who complains about a lot of logical fallacies, such as the nuking of the fridge, doesn't remember that none of the original three indie movies really contained that much realism. Also, oh my god, Shia LaBeouf is so hot.
I don't have an opinion on this movie. I think it's just as good as the other three, and they're all of equal quality. And I would not wish to upset anyone by picking one more than the other, because I feel like some people who worked on those things would potentially be listening to this and might get mad at me, and I don't want people to be mad at me. I don't have
also,
an opinion on this either way.
Earlier we were talking about how much of an artist Michael Bay is, and we should also mention how much of an artist George Lucas is in his filmmaking, who was the writer of Crystal Skull, I think, and the aliens at the end were his idea, and Steven Spielberg wanted to change it, but obviously, you know, him being a director, he's not allowed to do that at all. George Lucas' word is final, which we know from the shit he keeps adding to Star Wars, because he's such a brilliant filmmaker, and I just love his movies, and that new one that looked really terrible just looked really awesome, and that Red Tails.
Yeah, I think this is one of George Lucas's 12 best movies.
he seems to only get better with age. I mean, yeah, sure, he did the Star Wars trilogy when he was younger, and it was okay. But, I mean, since he's gotten older and wiser and better, I mean, we've gotten the new trilogy. And, I mean, those were such fantastic movies. And then you got Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skulls, and it was just phenomenal. It was one of those films that, again, you look back on, and you just wonder, like, why is anybody else attempting to compete with him? There's nobody in his league at this point, and it was just so markedly done. And it, the aliens really do add to the ambiance of this film, and without them, I really feel like this would have come apart. So, once again, I'm glad that he's there to, you know, earn his expert opinion and guide these movies into the realm of awesomeness.
I think as well, when you look at his later work now, like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, next to it, I feel like Empire Strikes Back, which he had a hand in the 80s, looks pretty mediocre compared to Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, you know, like, not very good. I kind of regret saying that. Like,
It was like amateur hour with his original Star Wars trilogy, and then, you know, he's outcast them, outpaced them, outwrote them, and everything else in his later career, and I'm just so glad that he continues to make movies that touches the world, and I hope he makes more. I hope he goes back and creates an even older Star Wars trilogy that adds even more to this rich universe. Because he seems to have a grasp on what he wants to do with these films, and who should be the one to tell him, no, don't do it, because we're, you know, like, nobody wants him to add anything to the new trilogy, but I feel like there's so much more ground he can cover with these characters. I wonder if he would ever think of making, like, a Jar Jar Binks spin-off.
I'm just waiting for the day where George Lucas can fleece more money out of me, because I haven't given... In buying the Star Wars trilogy on VHS and then on DVD and then on Blu-ray, you know, it's not like he's had much money out of me already, so he may as well get more out of me, because I'll put it in the post and send it to him in the mail. And I'm here, George, here's some more of my money. Just take it, please. I need to give you it, you know. Because obviously he needs it, because he's poor and he's lonely and he has no friends.
No, I mean... I assume he has no friends because nobody's on the intellectual level as him, and nobody really gets him anymore. This is why you have nerds on the internet complaining about his artistic vision. They really just don't understand what he is trying to accomplish, and it's a shame, because if they really, really could get into the mind of George Lucas and understand what he was giving them, what he was enriching their life with, they would bow down at his feet and appreciate his awesomeness. So are there any other hidden gem films that we want to talk about before we begin to wrap for this week?
I think all films are equally good.
So does that also mean that they're equally bad?
No, I didn't say that. Don't put words in my mouth.
Are you getting aggressive?
I'm not getting any aggressive at all, no sir.
Okay,
you,
just making
you
sure.
You should. I like aggressive guys.
You're entitled to your opinion, though. I'm not going to dissuade you from that tact.
Okay. Mr. Anthony, anything to add before we close up shop this week?
Oh, sorry. I was just busy filling lots of envelopes full of my money to send to George Lucas. So I've got nothing to add up now.
Okay.
Get out of here, dog! No! No! I don't have any food for you. Overcome. Just go away. No, I love you. You're so pretty. Oh, she's so pretty. Go, get out. Okay. Oh God. Hey.
Okay. So join us next week when we have a podcast dedicated to the imaginative works of Frank Miller and Mark Millar, and how they have brought comic books to a whole new era. And as always, you can find us on iTunes, Zune Marketplace, and check out the website, ArizonaRocks.com. For Nicholas, Anthony, Ashley, and myself, this has been the brand new NOTR1.